This is text for making audio files in MP3 of the spiritual book, The Road to Immortality. Being a description of the afterlife, purporting to be communicated by the late F. Myers, through Geraldine Cummins. Part I, Existence After Death. Comment. In writing of that mystery men call the other world, existence after death, or our father's many mansions, I am, you will understand, limited by what I know, limited by my own experiences. So I can only endeavor to write of the truth as I perceive it. You must pardon me if I seem to blaspheme, or if I seem merely to be treading the path others have trod. We are working, I hope, for the same end. We both feel, perhaps, that if we can add anything to the sum of human knowledge, as regards man's spiritual nature, our pains and our labors are worthwhile. You and I may not have the power to bring about sensational happenings, but at least we can, in our small way, help in the furtherance of the knowledge that there are vast horizons quite beyond our perception, stretching limitless into the infinite. These stray remarks of mine are the expression of my own other-world knowledge. I can only retail to you the truth, as I know it. Many and varied are the conditions that prevail when the soul comes alive in this world, or in one of the states to which we are subject after death. I use advisedly the term comes alive in connection with the soul. For the soul seems to us as dead when it lives in its body of clay as we would seem to the average agnostic. It is certainly true that many of us shades almost doubt the existence of a soul in the bodies of certain men and women of the low animal kind, who live, in the physical sense, on earth at the present moment. Chapter 1. The Riddle of Eternity. Many wonderful speculations have been made about the whence and whither of man's destiny. Few have directly attempted to discuss why man was created, why the material universe spins apparently forever and ever through space, its elements ever continuing, nothing lost, seemingly immortal, changing but in its imagery. A vast purposeless machine. Such was the epitaph the scientist of the last century wrote of it, and in so doing he declared the faith of the thinking men of his age, namely, that there is no why. There is, therefore, no fulfillment. Matter is the only reality. And this terror, a purposeless mechanical drama of motion and life, must, with ghastly monotony, play on forever and ever. Now, truth is far from us all, but it was immeasurably remote from those who came to this melancholy conclusion. However, if mind is accepted as existing apart from matter, there is a very definite prospect of discovering the reason for the strange fantasy of existence. First, it is necessary to define it, so far as is possible, in one sentence. If the contents of the following phrases be taken as a working hypothesis, then we may find an answer to the riddle of eternity. Shadow and substance, matter, soul and spirit, manifestation and its source, God, the unifying principle, disintegration in matter, in ever finer and finer substance, unification again in spirit. The spirit, or deeper mind, which nourishes a number of journeying souls with its light is a thought of God. This thought is individualized, but not in the human sense. It is individual in that it has a certain apartness from its creator, the apartness of the created thing from the one who gave it life. Now, the mystic speaks of the God within him. This is an entirely erroneous statement. The term God means the supreme mind, the idea behind all life, the whole in terms of pure thought, a whole within which is cradled the alpha and omega of existence as a mental concept. Every act, every thought, every fact in the history of the universes, every part of them, is contained within that whole. Therein is the original concept of all. So it is preposterous presumption on the part of the mystic to call his own spirit God. These myriad thoughts, or spirits, begotten by the mighty idea, differ from one another, many of them, nearly all, before they control and manifest themselves in matter, are crude, innocent and incomplete embryos. They must gather to themselves numberless experiences, manifest and express themselves in uncountable forms before they attain to completion, before they may know perfect wisdom, true reality. Once these are acquired, they may take on divine attributes and pass out yonder, entering within the supreme idea and becoming part of the whole. The reason, therefore, for the universe and for all appearances, for even the little mundane joys and sorrows of human beings, is to be found in the term evolution of spirit, the need for complete fulfillment which can be obtained through limitation, through the expression of the spirit in form. For only through that expression can spirit grow, developing from the embryo. Only through manifestation in appearance can spirit obtain fulfillment. For this purpose were we born, for this purpose we enter and pass through myriad worlds or states, and always the material universe is growing, expanding, giving fuller and fuller expression to mind. The purpose of existence may be summed up in a phrase: the evolution of mind in matter that varies in degree and kind so that mind develops through manifestation, and in an ever-expanding universe ever increases in power and gains thereby the true conception of reality. The myriad thoughts of God, those spirits which inform with life all material forms, are the lowest manifestation of God, and must thus learn to become godlike, to become an effective part of the whole. Chapter 2, The Chart of Existence. The following statement is an index, or rather an itinerary, of the journey of the soul. 1. The plane of matter. 2. Hades or the intermediate state. 3. The plane of illusion. 4. The plane of color. 5. The plane of flame. 6. The plane of light. 7. Out yonder, timelessness. Between each plane or new chapter in experience there is existence in Hades or in an intermediate state, when the soul reviews his past experiences and makes his choice, deciding whether he will go up or down the ladder of consciousness. 1. The plane of matter consists of all experiences in physical form, in matter as known to man. These experiences are not confined to the earth life. There are experiences of a similar character in numerous starry regions. Sometimes the body vibrates faster or slower than the body of man in such starry places. But the term physical expresses its character and nature. 3. The plane of illusion is the dream period connected with life passed on the plane of matter. 4. The plane of color. Existence in this state is not governed by the senses. It is more directly controlled by mind. It is still an existence in form, and therefore an existence in substance. That substance is a very rarefied matter. It might be called an air of matter. The plane of color is within the terrestrial zone or within the corresponding starry zone wherein the soul previously had experience of a physical existence. 5. The plane of pure flame. In this state the soul becomes aware of the pattern his spirit is weaving in the tapestry of eternity and realizes all the emotional life of those souls fed by the same spirit. 6. The plane of pure light. Within its borders the soul obtains an intellectual conception of all the previous existences within its group soul. Further, he realizes all emotional life within the body of the world or earth soul. 7. Lastly, the seventh plane. The spirit and its various souls are now fused and pass into the supreme mind, the imagination of God, wherein resides the conception of the whole, of universe after universe, of all states of existence, of past, present and future, of all that has been and all that shall be. Herein is continuous and complete consciousness, the true reality. 14. Chapter 3, The Plane of Illusion, The Third Plane. Brevity can be the soul of wit, but it can also be the soul of error. It will be necessary for me to create a small dictionary if I am to give you my views, in a few pages, on that interesting topic, eternal life. I shall first define the multitude of the newly dead, those tumultuous waves of life that break, daily and nightly, like the tides upon our shores. Birth and death are two words which contain the same meaning. How strangely they sound to me now, for I have lived so long in a state in which words are obsolete, in which thoughts reign supreme. Roughly, the newly dead may be divided into three categories: spirit man, soul man, animal man. There are many subdivisions of these particular states of grace or disgrace. But bear these three terms in your mind, for to whichever one you belong so will your future be determined. Now I could classify conditions or surroundings. Firstly, there is the earth life. Secondly, the transition period known as Hades. Thirdly, existence within an image or reflection of the earth known to some as summer land, I prefer to call it illusion land. Fourthly, all that life which is apparelled in form as it is known to man, all those lives in ever finer and finer bodies which are connected with the material universe. Fifthly, a mental or intellectual existence within the group soul in which you envisage and experience but only as an act of emotional thought all the stages of existence that belong to those various souls fed by the same spirit. I have spoken before of the group soul and defined it for you. Sixthly, a conscious existence within and without time, the measure of time being all those lives that are passed in form. It embraces existence in the most tenuous shapes. It embraces experience in matter whatever its character or degree. Lastly comes the seventh state, the merging of the journeying soul with its spirit. When you attain to that beatitude you pass into the beyond, you realize the meaning of the word immortality. Matter is transcended, cast off. You enter into timelessness and become one with the idea behind all life, one with God, one with that portion of His spirit which has been connected with you in all the planes of existence. The memory world the earth is as a reflection in a mirror, it is real only through the image that is cast upon the glass. The earth, therefore, depends for its recognition upon the nature of individual vision and perception. All men, who are in the clay, are unreal, so they have power to perceive only in a certain manner that strange illusion, the swiftly rotating globe. When they shuffle off the heavy body, when in a finer shape they take flight from it, they frequently do not realize the fundamental unreality of earth. They hunger for the dream which was home to them. Then these souls knock and the door is opened. They enter into a dream that, in its main particulars, resembles the earth. But now, this dream is memoriant. For a time, they live within it. All those activities that made up their previous life are reenacted, that is, if such is their will. They can, at any time, if they choose, escape from the coil of earth memories, from what I might term the swaddling clothes of the life after death. For all these souls are as babies, unaware of the real world of which they are inhabitants, no more cognizant than are infants of the vast whirl of life about them, of its astonishing intellectual activities, of its achievements. Such infant souls frequently communicate with earth when they are in a state almost analogous to the earth sleep. They will then endeavor to describe their memory world. It is almost precisely similar to the one you inhabit at the moment. Some call this memory dream summerland, quite an apartment term. For the soul, freed from the limitations of the flesh, has far greater mental powers, and can adapt the memory world to his taste. He does so unconsciously, instinctively choosing the old pleasures, but closing the door to the old pains. He lives for a while in this beatific, infantile state. But, like the baby, he inhabits only a dream, and has no knowledge and hardly any perception of the greater life in which he is now planted. Of course, the hour comes when his spiritual perceptions awaken, when he seeks to escape from the memory dream, when, in short, he realizes his own increased intellectual powers, and, above all, his capacity for living on a finer plane of being. Then he passes from the state of illusion and enters upon an existence which few communicating intelligences have ever attempted to describe to man. However, to those of us who have journeyed beyond the memory world, this alleged region or heaven of the departed is false because it is unreal, a reflection of a reflection, a tenuous dream that fades before spiritual knowledge. When the crossing of death is achieved, many are happy in that state of grace, but theirs is the vegetative happiness, the unintelligent content of an infant who knows little or nothing of the world in which he or she lives. Hades. Hades is a term which corresponds with the astral plane. Immediately on the dissolution of the body there comes a brief period of seeming disintegration, a temporary dislocation of those parts which make you one. Pray do not conjure up unpleasant associations with Hades. I died in Italy, a land I loved, and I was very weary at the time of my passing. For me Hades was a place of rest, a place of half-lights and drowsy peace. As a man wins strength from a long deep sleep, so did I gather that spiritual and intellectual force I needed during the time I abode in Hades. According to his nature and makeup, every traveler from the earth is affected in a different or varying manner by this place or state on the frontiers of two lives, on the borders of two worlds. Illusion: during the period passed on the astral plane, the soul sloughs the astral shape and enters into the etheric body within which he resides as long as he chooses to dwell in illusion land, that reflection of reflections, the dream of the earth personality. Peace and content prevails so long as he remains within its borders. But in time such peace becomes wearisome, for no actual progress, either up or down, can be made in that delightful region of dream. Picture it for a moment: you live in surroundings that resemble those you knew on earth. You are, it is true, freed from money worries, freed from the need to earn your daily bread. Your etheric body is nourished by light which is not the light of the sun. It is possessed also of energy and life. It does not suffer pain, nor is it subjected to struggle of any kind. It is indeed as if you lived in a pond, and soon you weary of the limitations of that calm unruffled sheet of water. You yearn for struggle, effort, ecstasy, you long for wide horizons. The call of the road has come to you again. In short, you are anxious to make further progress either up or down. Animal man, if you are what I term animal man, in other words, if you belong to the primitive type, you will make a corresponding choice. You will desire to go downwards, that is to say, you will choose to be an inhabitant of matter as dense as the physical body you discarded when you passed into Hades. Usually you return to Earth. But I am told that the animal man occasionally prefers to enter a material existence on some other planet in which matter may be even denser than any earthly substance. Human beings exist on certain planets, but their material bodies are subject to a different time from the Earth time, and travel, therefore, within the rhythm of that time. Consequently, their physical parts are either vibrating slower or faster than yours and may not be discovered through the medium of man's senses. I call them human beings because the conditions of their lives, the construction of their physical parts, are similar to those of man. The resting place on the road, I stated that no progress was made in illusion land. This is, in a sense, incorrect. No seeming progress is made. Illusion land is the dream of the earth personality. For a short while after his entry into that state, the soul is at peace, warring desires are quiescent. But they wake again at the time the dream is beginning to break. In fact, when these furies are roused, they themselves break and shatter the dream. For in illusion land, the animal man can satisfy his desire for pleasure without any difficulty, without struggle, so, swiftly, there comes satiety through the full 19. Satisfaction of his paltry appetites, then there arises discontent, and he longs for a new life. He is thoroughly bored by this resting place on the road. Thereby progress is made, inasmuch as he has come to realize the limitations of the earth dream. On the other hand, the animal man has very little awareness of the joys of the soul. Usually, at this point, when longing for a new life with all his being, he desires that it shall be one within the flesh, that it shall be another episode passed in the grosser bodily forms. So he goes downwards. But he descends in order to rise. His experiences in the dream of the earth personality rouse the higher part of the self in him. During his next incarnation, he will probably either enter into the state of the soul man, or he will at least be less of an animal, and will seek an existence and follow a life of a higher order than the one he led when previously lodged in the flesh. Summer land, then, is the dream of the earth personality, so it should not be regarded as either heaven, Hades or hell, but merely as a resting place on the road when the soul dreams back, and thereby summarizes the emotional and subconscious life of his earth existence. But he dreams back in order that he may be able to go forward once more on his journey. The prison of the senses, your present surroundings are, in a sense, your creation, in that you are mentally so unemancipated, your nerves and senses convey to you your perception of life. If you were capable of focusing your ego or daily consciousness within your deeper mind, if in short you trained yourself to pass into a thought compound from which form, as the senses convey it, were absent, the material world would vanish. You would no longer perceive it. If you were sufficiently developed spiritually, you might be able to escape form altogether, though actually this is not possible until you have had numberless further experiences. 20. However, on higher planes of being, your intellectual power is so greatly increased that you can control form, you learn how to draw life to it. As a sculptor takes up the formless clay and shapes it, so does your mind draw life and light to it and shape your own surroundings according to your vision. In the first stage, your vision is limited by your earth experiences and memories, and so you create your own version of the appearances you knew on earth. Understand, however, that in illusion land you do not consciously create your surroundings through an act of thought. Your emotional desires, your deeper mind manufacture these without your being actually aware of the process. For still you are the individualized soul caught within the limitations of your earthly self and caught also within the fine etheric body which now is yours. The man in the street, men and women, as they climb the ladder of their life in the flesh, are, as it were, suspended between earth and sky. They are between two mysteries, that of birth and that of death. They fear to look downwards, they fear to look upwards. As a rule, all their attention must be given to each rung of the ladder on which they seek to balance themselves. So even the most skillful among them is limited by his position upon the ladder, and finds it difficult, almost impossible, to consider what comes before and what comes after the little space of years that makes up his life in the world. The same parallel may be applied to myriads of souls who have passed through the gates of death. Life for them is certainly on a far loftier and grander scale, but still they dwell between mysteries. They are balanced between God and their own world of appearances. So many of the dead who endeavor to send messages descriptive of their surroundings and of their life to living human beings can only describe the actual appearance of things about them, 21, can only write from out of that limited personality which they brought with them from the earth. If I chose to describe the afterlife from the point of view of Tom Jones, who had been a lawyer's clerk and had lived in London all his life, his mind and spirit bounded by his law work and his own little personality, I should very probably give you what would appear to be a trite and materialistic description of the hereafter. For, as a rule, Tom Jones is only able to communicate with human beings while he is still in a very crude state of mental and spiritual development. Usually he is like a blind puppy after birth. He writes of what he cannot see. When perception comes to him, when sight is bestowed on the eyes of his soul, he does not, so far as I am aware, look towards the earth again. He feels his own mental impecuniosity. He has not the power to express in words, which he must borrow from earth minds, the amazing character of life after death. So he is silenced, and no echo comes from behind the dark curtain which will even faintly convey the music of that other life, yield to man the strange rhythm of a universe within a universe, a life within a life, and all lying, as ships in harbor, within the infinite imagination of God. Tom Jones represents many millions. He is the conventional worker, quite efficient in all matters connected with his particular profession, but limited by it and by his life of small amusements, by the lack of leisure which prevents him from ever considering the ultimate purpose of life. As a horse driven in harness and blinkers, so has he been driven from the cradle to the grave. His life has not been eventful. It contains a measure of sorrow and a measure of laughter. What becomes, therefore, of this symbol of the crowd? What becomes of Tom Jones, Mrs. Jones and Miss Jones? It is far better for us in this study of the many mansions of the hereafter, first to consider the future of the ordinary man and woman. Are they transformed in the twinkling of an eye? Do they become great seers? Highly 22. Developed both spiritually and mentally? Or do they follow out the law of evolution as it is known by men? We must first answer these two questions. If Tom Jones is changed by death into a great seer or into a lofty spiritual genius, he is no longer Tom Jones. He cannot, therefore, be said to survive death. However, I can assure you that he follows the slow path of evolution. He is born into the next world with all his limitations, with all his narrowness of outlook, with his affections and his dislikes. He is, in short, thoroughly human. For such a man, a marvelous and lofty existence of a spiritual character is scarcely possible. He is still mentally in swaddling clothes. Therefore, he must be treated as the baby is treated in your world. He must be carefully looked after and protected. He must meet with no sudden or violent change, for he is not of a sufficient spiritual and mental ripeness to be able to bear it. He belongs to a great multitude who must, as we describe it over here, dream back in order that they may later on go forward, proceed towards the ultimate goal, towards a state of spiritual vision when they may enter the timeless state, may pass out of the great cosmic picture and enter within the mind of their Creator. But there is much to be done by Tom Jones before he can, if ever, attain to that condition. He is still an infant needing playthings like a child, and, therefore, requiring about him a world of appearances. The more advanced souls whom the Church may call the angels and whom I call the wise can exist in tenuous forms within vast vistas of space and lead within it an extraordinarily vivid existence. Tom Jones is quite incapable of facing such a strange and strenuous state of being. So we, who are a little more advanced than he, watch by the gates of death, and we lead him and his comrades, after certain preparatory stages, to the dream which he 23. Will inhabit, living still, according to his belief, in earth time. He bears within him the capacity for recalling the whole of his earth life. Familiar surroundings are his desperate need. He does not want a jeweled city, or some monstrous vision of infinity. He craves only for the homely landscape he used to know. He will not find it here in the concrete sense, but he will find, if he so desires it, the illusion. The wise, as I call them, can draw from their memory and from the great superconscious memory of the earth the images of houses and streets, of country as known to these wayfarers so recently come from the earth. The wise spirits think, and thereby make a creation which becomes visible to Tom Jones. So, in those early days after his passing, he is not cast into emptiness, into a void. After he has slept in dimness, rested as in a chrysalis while his etheric body is being shaped, he emerges as the butterfly, coming into a world formed for him by the concentrated thought of men of great spiritual discernment, for whom I can find no better term than the wise or the creative life. An image is drawn from the young soul's memories. It is of a country considerably more beautiful than but not unlike the country Tom Jones and his comrades have known. This country is not real. It is a dream. But to Tom Jones it is as real as was his office desk and the alarum clock that roused him in the morning, summoning him to his work. It undoubtedly presents a more attractive appearance than his little grey London world, but in essentials it is of the same familiar stuff from which his England is made. Within this dream he will find his friends, some of his own people, and those two or three persons he really loved, that is, if they have already gone before him, been summoned by death at an earlier time. Let us picture Tom Jones in surroundings that seem to him material and therefore do not, in any way, arouse his 24. Natural timidity. He is a simple soul and has led a clean, respectable life, satisfying his desires in moderation. He has spent 70 years of his life in a certain environment on earth. Why should he, after parting with his physical body, again occupy surroundings with which he is to a great extent familiar? Why should he face another existence of a similar character to the last? In reality, it is not similar. It is the period of a great and slow change for Tom Jones. His life in the world, dating, say, from 1850 to 1920, corresponds with the germinating life of a seed in the earth. When its first fresh green shoot presses upwards towards the light, then he reaches the end of his term of years, he is passing into another life. The gardener, who has charge of him and of many other little plants, places them, if they are suitable, in a forcing house when, as I have described to you, he introduces them to a world of form similar in character to the one they had previously known. These wayfarers find themselves in familiar surroundings amongst people of a similar mentality. But they find very frequently that their actual needs are not the same. They are not condemned to some mechanically performed task for the greater part of their existence, because their etheric bodies do not require food. They draw what is essential for their well-being from that all-pervading invisible substance. On Earth, men are slaves of the physical body, and, therefore, slaves of darkness. In the hereafter, we may truly say that, given certain conditions, they become servants of the light.